All right. You ready? Okay. One, two, three. Runsmith Enterprises presents episode 14 of Topics in Endurance Sports. I'm your host, Tim. Today is Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. You can find out more about me at my website at runsmith.net. Social information, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Also my email, which is chemsmith1@gmail.com, like the beginning of the word chemistry, C-H-E-M. chemsmith1@gmail.com. And you can find out about my coaching services there as well. Yes, I am a running coach. So please check that out, as well as information on previous episodes and information about this episode, including pictures that I put up on there. This episode is brought to you by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. More information about this later in the show. So if you are interested in saving money on life insurance, stay tuned. What is today's topic or topics? It's a little trip I did with my daughter. So the title of this is going to be Oklahoma Running Trip and Camille Herron. Yes, Camille Herron is big in the ultra world right now. So we have something special about her in this episode. You'll find out. A little bit from my last episode, which was episode 13, I talked about the Tunnel Hill 100-mile race that I did. Speaking of Camille Herron, somewhat coincidentally, she won that race, so there's a lot about her in that race, or some about her in that race, because not only did she win, she went outright, and she broke the world record. In fact, a little bit about that, I tried to track down exactly what that meant by world record. Now, first of all, it's a trail world record, but it's an overall world record. No man has beaten her officially. Okay, according to official, I guess we're going by USATF, USA Track and Field records, no man has run a trail race faster than Camille Herron's 12:42 at Tunnel Hill, which I witnessed. There is one person, and only one person, who has run a trail race faster than her, and that's Jonas Bude. I think that's how you say his name, B-U-U-D, I think, Bude. He's out of Sweden, and he did a race, and I can't think of the name of the race. You could probably Google it, and it was a trail race, and he did it around 12:30 or so, only about 10 or so minutes faster than Camille Herron. His race was not officially certified by USATF or anything. Nevertheless, that's still, you know, in the trail world, it's tough to certify a trail race, very tough, and that's one reason she ran this race. Was because it was a certified 100-mile race. So it's tough to do. But even so, if we just forget about official records, we have Jonas Bude at number one around 12:30-something and Camille Herron at number two at 12:42. And that was her first 100-mile finish, by the way. So no matter how you look at this, unbelievable. A couple other things that I left out. How many actually ran Tunnel Hill? I didn't have that number last time. About 200 people started the 100 mile, and about 375 started the 50 mile. So there were 575 people, roughly, running that race, a big race. By the way, I've just received word that he is considering adding a marathon onto it next year. So if 50 miles is still more than you want to do, what a great time to do a marathon. It's crushed gravel. It feels wonderful to run on. He'll have it certified. It can be a Boston qualifier, I'm pretty sure. So it would be it's very flat, so it'd be a great, great course to try to qualify for Boston. And you'll have plenty of time if you're a slower runner, because there are people running a lot farther, so I'm sure the marathon cutoff's going to be pretty long. At least I would guess it would be. He'll probably start it Sunday morning. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I think he'd start it Sunday morning. I don't know how long it's going to be. But anyway, the point is, he's thinking about adding a marathon. I also didn't mention all the winners. Yes, Camille won overall, and she won the female as well in the 100 mile. Among the men, it was Mike Bialik of Minnesota who won for the men. His time was 13:02:44. He was about 20 minutes behind Camille Herron. He had the course record. I think he got it the year before. And I think it was 12:50-something. So he was just a little bit slower, and Camille was just a little bit faster than that. In the 50-mile race, it was Matt Hoyes of Kentucky finishing in 5:54:40. That is blazing fast. And Alicia Hain, also of Kentucky, in 7:26:31. So congratulations to them. I also didn't mention a few people I saw. I saw Shannon Bryan at the Tunnel Hill race. I believe that was his first 100-mile run and finish. He is one of the contributors to the Southeastern Trail Runner podcast. Check that out. It's a group of guys, and they're pretty fun. I like their podcasts. Also, I saw a friend of mine, Steph Whitmore of Iowa. I put on a race in Iowa a number of years ago, a 50K, and she came and won it. I had no idea who she was at the time. Turns out she's unbelievable. She's a really fast runner. She ended up sixth female overall in 19:51:35. I actually think that was probably underperforming for her. She's run like six 100-mile races in different states, and in like five of them, she holds the female course record, if not the overall course record. That's how fast she is. She just went the one down in Louisiana and got the course record there. I think 19:51:35 for a course as flat as this, again, I'm guessing she can do faster than that, but nevertheless, she still was sixth place overall, and that's still really, really, really fast. So congratulations to Steph Whitmore. Also, one other thing is you may have noticed if you listened or watched that I was able to record the whole race on my Garmin. And at the time, I was using a Garmin 235. If you're wondering how did the battery last that long, because it took me over 27 hours. No, the battery does not last that long. I used a little charger. So I have these little chargers. They're about 3 or 4 inches long, and they're little cylinders, about a half inch wide diameter cylinder, and it's a battery charger. And I connected that to my watch with the cable I used to charge the watch, and I actually charged it on the run. So a number of people are doing this, and that is a possibility for you if you have a watch that doesn't last as long as how far you're going to run. Now, one thing, not every watch can be charged while it's running. Only some watches can. Number two, it's not an ideal solution. Number one, it's a pain just to pull all the cord out and the battery out and all that. How do you really do it? What I did was the watch was on my left wrist and actually held the charger in my left hand. So I have this cable just dangling as I'm running. And it worked. I did it like twice for like a half hour each. It wasn't a big problem. It didn't really cost me any time or anything. Another thing, though, that is a problem is that it really is only going to work well if the conditions are right. In this race, it was dry and it was cool, so I wasn't there was no wetness involved. But if it was pouring down rain or if you were sweating profusely, I think it'd be more of a problem because your connections would be getting all wet and stuff. Maybe that wouldn't make any difference, but I think it'd be more of a pain. Or if it was like really, really cold and you're wearing gloves the whole time and you don't want to take them off because your fingers will freeze, you know, then you're fiddling with that and your hands are frozen. It's just one more thing to try to do with frozen hands. So I really don't like the idea. And in fact, I just sold that Garmin 235. I didn't really like it for a few reasons. So right now I have no real running watch. I have an old Garmin. I don't even know what it is, like a 75 or some number like that, that doesn't do anything but give you your distance and your time, and it only has a few hours of battery life. So I'm on the market for a new watch. So if anybody wants to tell me what they like, let me know. The problem is I'm cheap. I really don't want to spend more than $250-$300. But the only thing I really need is good distance, good time. I would like to have good elevation, though, which the Garmin 235 did not have. So see, as soon as I say those three things, well, if you say four things, if you say you want accurate distance, accurate time. Okay, that's not hard. Accurate distance, accurate elevation, and long battery life. If you say those three things, no watch has those three things for a good price, as far as I know. They all get too expensive. You have to give up something all the time. Anyway, I wasn't going to get on about watches here. Okay, the last thing was I interviewed Jess and Andrew for that podcast. And I failed to mention I interviewed them at a place called Oakley Wines in Cincinnati. I just want to say thank you to Oakley Wines. They actually let us go down in their lower level, which was closed off, and do the interview down there. So thank you to Oakley Wines. All right, let's get on to the actual show. Oklahoma Running Trip and Camille Herron. So, as I mentioned, I did a little trip with my daughter. So this is something I'm trying to kind of institute with my daughter. She lives 5 hours away in Iowa, and I'm in Ohio, so I miss her. So I try to come up with excuses to see her. And as it's cold up in Iowa, I said, hey, we should go down south in the winter, you know, a little bit south, and do a long weekend and hang out and do stuff. And it's kind of a daddy-daughter thing. I mean, I'd be happy if my wife went, but she teaches, and it's hard for her to take days off work. So it ends up being kind of a daddy-daughter thing. And we did it last year. We went down to Arkansas, and I did a race down there called the David's Trail Endurance Run. I forget. It was like episode number 3. It was one of my very first podcasts, or 2 or something. One of my very first podcasts. Maybe it was 2. Anyway, we went down there, and I did a race down there. And then we hung out had like a long weekend. So I thought, let's try it again. And this time I said, let's go down to Oklahoma. Now, it's not really super warm in Oklahoma, but it's warmer than Iowa. So it is, and we can't go too far unless we were to fly. So this was still a really long drive from Iowa down to Oklahoma. But we did this long weekend. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what we did down there as well as the running related stuff. So just for fun, I'll give you some information about the non-running stuff. So we took off and we drove the first day down to Wichita and stayed in Wichita. We actually went to a little brewery there in the evening when we arrived called the Hopping Gnome Brewery. Gnome as in G-N-O-M-E. So if you're ever in Wichita, check out the Hopping Gnome Brewery. We went there and had a beer. That was nice. And the next day, before we went to Oklahoma City, which was our destination, that's not a long drive, it's only a few hours, we went to a museum in Wichita called the Museum of World Treasures. And it's one of these museums that just has some of this and some of that, you know, just a few random things that they've focused on. So it focused on some ancient history, ancient Egyptian artifacts, ancient Roman artifacts, these types of things, some ancient civilizations. Also had some dinosaur stuff, and we love dinosaur stuff. So it had a T-Rex, a partial skeleton of a T-Rex, and some other ancient animals and other types of creatures, skeletons of those. And so I always loved that stuff. It also has a lot of war-related, a whole floor of like war-related stuff. So artifacts and things from the Civil War, from World War I, World War II, Vietnam, Korea, I think all of those. So things like uniforms that they wore, guns that were used, some of their equipment and stuff like that. So if you're interested in any of that stuff, it was a good museum. I mean, we were there for a few hours just checking the museum out. And we kind of ended up, you know, flying through some of it because it was like, had enough, but it was a good museum. So we enjoyed that. So that's what we did in Wichita, a little stop in Wichita. So after we did that, we drove down to Oklahoma. And we actually spent the night at my aunt and uncle's house. They live in Blanchard, Oklahoma, which is not really a suburb. It's just a little bit south, though, of Oklahoma City. Okay, just a bit south, 20 miles or 10 miles or something south of Oklahoma City. By the way, if you remember those huge day of tornadoes back in, I think it was 2013. You remember that? There was like 80 tornadoes in Oklahoma that day. It was absolutely completely insane. Maybe the biggest day of tornadoes in the United States ever. They lost their house that day. It went right through their area and blew their whole house down. They had to rebuild the house and everything. Evidently, they were in a car a few miles away, kind of in a safe area, but they came back to no house. So, anyway, if you remember that event. So that was Friday that we went from Wichita to Oklahoma City. So Saturday morning, my daughter and I did a race. And it was very exciting for me. My daughter has just kind of gotten into running. And on her own, she just decided to start running. She did a 5K a little while back and decided to do a trail race. So I found a race to do. And it was a short race. It's not an ultra. And this race is called the State Games of Oklahoma race. So, you know, every state, or I think every state, has kind of its games that they do. They're not all called the State Games, but they're all called something. And that's what these are, kind of their little mini Olympics, like the State Olympics type of thing. So that's what we did. And this was a trail race. It was at a place called Lake Stanley Draper at that lake. We didn't run around the lake, but we were near the lake. And it was a 4-mile loop. So you could either do the 4-mile race, the 8-mile race, or the 12-mile race, depending on how many loops you did. And I did the 12-mile race, and my daughter did the 8-mile race. And I'm sure now she could have done 12. She asked me which one to do, and I said, oh, do the 8, you know, because her longest run up until then had been 10 miles. So, yes, she could have done the 12, but just to make sure, you know, it was her first trail race, I thought, let's just do 8. And she did 8. The race course, not super technical, not super hilly. This beautiful red clay they have in Oklahoma. So if people have ever been down there, you know about this clay. It's very pretty. I've raced a couple of times in Oklahoma before, but they were triathlons. It's called the Redman Triathlon. I've done a couple of times in Oklahoma. So I have seen it. Actually, I lived in Oklahoma for 2.5 years. I lived in Weatherford, Oklahoma from 95 to 97. So if anyone's from that area, yes, I lived in Oklahoma for a few years. I was a college professor for a couple of years. Anyway, that was the race. It was very nice, very beautiful. We were really lucky. It was like 60-some degrees, and that's higher than the average temperature for that day. It was really, really, really nice day. We got really lucky. Like I said, a looped course. It was bike trail, so sometimes it's very winding, you know, how bike trails are back and forth and back and forth, and little ups and downs, but... there were hills, but they were small hills, okay? So it's not like you would never, not like completely flat, but just, you know, little hills up and down and here and there. And there was an aid station at about the 2-mile mark, roughly. Didn't have a whole lot. I can't remember exactly what it had, but it had what you needed. And then there was an aid station at the start-finish. So that's what it was. Not a whole lot to say about the race other than we really had a blast. And I love doing shorter races sometimes. Here's the funny thing. I actually do better in shorter races. I'm a short race person. If I just want by results and where I place, I'd be smarter to just do 5Ks and 10Ks and half marathons. I always place higher than I do in ultras, but I do a lot more ultras than I do these short races. I don't really know why. Kind of silly, but that's the way it is. As far as our times go, my daughter finished in 1 hour, 24 minutes, and 29 seconds for 8 miles, 1:24:29. She was first place. Now, granted, there were only two people in her age group, but she was still first place, the first of two females in the 20 to 25 age group. But she did beat the other woman by 24 minutes or something. Beat her pretty, I don't mean to say that in a mean way, but she was quite a ways ahead of her. But even more impressively, she was 8th of 26 females. 8th of 26, that's in the top third. This is her first trail race. This is about her first time ever even running on trails. She ran in road shoes. She doesn't do trail running. She was 30th of 57 overall, including the men. She was right in the middle of the pack, including the men, in her very first trail race. So I think that's pretty darn good. And she's only been running about a year, maybe, something like that. I finished in 1:58:50. So yes, at the very end there, you know, 2 hours is completely unimportant, right? But at the end, I was like, oh, I got to run really fast. I tried to finish in 2 hours. So luckily, I had some energy at the end, and I was flying. I was flying at the end, and I made it in 1:58:50. I was also first in my age group, first of two males. There was only two again, 56 to 60, ouch, age group. I was 14th of 37 males overall. That sounds a little better, a little not too bad. And, oh, I'm sorry, 14th of 37 males, so about in the top third, barely, of 37 males, not quite the top third. And I was 21 of 63 overall, exactly at the one-third the way point, I guess, 21 of 63 overall. So it was pretty exciting because we both won our age groups, and they give out medals like the Olympics. So we both got a gold medal, which is really, really exciting. All right, so I'm holding it up to the camera. And for those of you who don't know, this podcast does end up on YouTube. I just take a video of me talking, and then I put the podcast on YouTube. There'll also be pictures and stuff there. So I'm holding up the medal to the camera, and I'll put a picture of this medal also on the website, so you don't need to watch. But there it is, and that's beautiful. It says the State Games of Oklahoma is the medal that my daughter and I both got a gold medal. I'm showing the little bib. Okay, there's a bib. It says State Games of Oklahoma Winter Games 2018 Trail Run. Because, of course, they have all types of events. And the other thing we got was a cotton shirt. That's gray, which is one of my favorite colors for clothing. I like gray and black. Let's see if we can State Games of Oklahoma, it says on it. Kind of a cursive writing. I show it to the camera, then I can't see what I'm showing. Okay. State Games of Oklahoma, it says Trail Run on the back. So again, I like gray and I like black. I'll put a picture of that up on the website too. That's all we got, but it was cheap. It was like $30 or something. So, you know, you didn't get a ton of stuff, but you didn't pay anything either. So it's perfect. I don't need a whole ton of stuff anyway. And by the way, you only got a medal if you place. So the people who didn't get first, second, or third didn't get medals. So it's pretty cool. I mean, you can imagine as a dad how I feel about this. It was pretty darn awesome to run my first time we ever ran a race together, and we both get first place out of two, but still pretty neat to do. The winners for this race, for the 4 mile, it was a 16-year-old, Alex Uribe of Oklahoma City. He ran it in 29:05, and a 17-year-old female, Rylan, R-Y-L-A-N, McCord of Duncan, Oklahoma. She ran it in 34:29. In the 8 mile, it was John Green of Edmond, Oklahoma, 1 hour, 1 minute flat. And Julie Martin of Oklahoma City, 107:34. They won the 8 miles. In the 12 mile, it was Matthew Anderson, this was my race, of Edmond, Oklahoma, 126:12. So he beat me by almost 30 minutes. Oh, yeah, over 30 minutes, actually, a little over 30 minutes. And Elena I'm going to go with Beechler, B-I-E-C-H-L-E-R, of Dubuque, Iowa. Yes, she won for the women in 134:22. She was fourth overall. She is fast. And I'm going to bring her up in about 2 seconds again, okay? So those were all the winners. Congratulations to all the winners. After the race, we didn't hang out too long, got some pictures and grabbed some M&Ms or something, you know. It did have a start-finish. It did have some stuff like that. And after the race, we went to a place called Empire Pizza, which is, it's not downtown. I don't know where it is. It's in Oklahoma City somewhere. Because, you know, of course, on Facebook, I said, hey, where should we go? And someone said Empire Pizza. So we went there and had some pizza, and it was okay. It was like you get slices. You could get a whole pie, but we just got slices. And it's kind of one of these places that has like fancy pizza with weird stuff on it, you know, like kale or something like that. And my daughter and I are really simple. We just got pepperoni pizza. Probably the only ones in there just getting regular pepperoni. Her and I and little kids, you know. But most people are getting like fancy pizzas. But it was good. It was New York style, big, gigantic, well, big slices, very thin crust. But it was good. So we ate there. And so right before we're going in there, next to it is an ice cream shop. So we get out and we're walking to the Empire Pizza. And there's a couple walking into the ice cream shop. And the guy turns and the guy's walking kind of slowly. And he turns and looks at us and goes, hey, did you race today? Because I think we still had our running clothes on, our bib on. They didn't, but we still did. Well, yeah, we did the Oklahoma State Games, and we find out they did as well. We're like, oh, that's cool, blah, 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 blah. And one of us said, where are you from? And I found out they are from Dubuque, Iowa. It was Elena and her husband, Richard, from Dubuque, Iowa. So my daughters from Iowa City, Iowa, they were the only three people from Iowa. I'm from Ohio, the only person from Ohio, but I claim to be from Iowa. That's where I was born and everything. So all the Iowa folks randomly ran into each other right after the race. I don't know what the odds of that are, but pretty amazing. And the thing is, we surely did well, right? My daughter came in first in her age group. I came in first. Elena came in first female overall in the 12 mile. Richard did the 8 mile. He was fifth overall in the 8 mile. So he's fast as well. His time was 107.03 for the 8 mile. So we really kind of kicked butt. It was pretty neat. And so we talked to them a little bit. And I feel a little bad. I wish I would have grabbed my recorder and gotten a little interview with them. So anyway, congratulations to Elena and Richard. Nice to meet you. I'm now Facebook friends with them, so they seem pretty cool. I think Elena's, her goal is to try to run a race in every single state. But what's neat is she's not just saying, oh, I want to run a marathon in every state. I think just any type of race, so a little bit more flexible. But they came down to do that. Pretty neat. All right, let's see. After the race and after eating Empire Pizza, we went down to a mall and we hung out at a mall and we went to a movie, The Greatest Show on Earth. Have you guys seen that movie? It's the one with Hugh Jackman and it's about P.T. Barnum. I almost never, ever, ever go to movies. I mean, it can be 2 or 3 years between going to movies, so... And if we went to a movie, I really, really loved it. My daughter and I love musicals, and it's a musical. So it was really, really, we really loved the movie. Excellent. We're hoping they turn it into a Broadway play. And then on Sunday, which was our last day there, Monday we drove back. On Sunday, we went to the Oklahoma City Zoo. So that's a nice zoo, and we were lucky again. It was cooler than Saturday, but still pretty nice. It was really windy, though. If you've ever lived in Oklahoma or been through there, you know it can get extremely windy. So Sunday was very windy, but still we had a nice time at the zoo. It's a good little zoo to go, not little, but it's a good zoo to go to. The highlights of the zoo were a baby ape, a one-month-old ape, which the mommy was holding the whole time and turned towards us, and we got a pretty good view for a while. Not too far away. There were also four young tigers. They're all about 6 months old, and they were really a lot of fun. They were playing in front of us and chasing each other and grabbing each other's tails and stuff like that. And they also had a couple of red pandas. They were super cute, and we got to watch those run around. So those were our three favorite animals that we saw. They had a pygmy hippo as well, but he was just lying there is all he was doing. And, of course, a bunch of other creatures. So we did like the zoo. And then there's one more thing we did, which I'll get to, all right, after that on Sunday evening. But before we talk about what we did Sunday evening, I have a little interview with someone about the trail race that we did. So let's listen to that interview right now. Okay, I'm with the finisher of the Trail State Games of Oklahoma. Tell me your name.
Tia Smith.
And where are you from?
Iowa City, Iowa.
That is a coincidence because I have a daughter with the same name from the same city.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Okay, so how many trail races have you done before this?
This is my first one.
First trail race.
Yep.
Very exciting. And you did the two-loop race, is that right?
Yes, eight miles.
8 miles. How did the race go for you?
Pretty good. It was a lot harder than I thought it would be, but I ran the whole thing and finished it.
So the first lap, do you know about how long that took you for the first lap?
I did the first lap shorter than the second one, I think.
What was your final time? About an hour and 25 minutes?
Yeah.
So the first lap maybe in 40 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
maybe a little
longer maybe.
And then your second lap, maybe 42 or 43 or 44 minutes or something. So that's pretty close. It's not like you were way... It's not like the first lap you ran fast and the second lap you were, like, walking.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little bit slower. So when you first started running, were you in a big line of people?
Yes, it was very crowded.
And did you just kind of tuck in behind someone and just stay on their heels, kind of?
Yeah, after a little bit, I found a couple women that were running about my pace, so I just kind of stayed behind them and ran when they ran around people, and it was pretty nice.
Did you have any troubles with the roots?
I kind of tripped a couple times, but I didn't fall over or anything, so I did okay enough.
And it was very winding.
Yeah, lots of turns.
Lots of turns. That slow you down?
Yeah, I think a little bit.
It does. After the first loop, then were you more alone when you were running, more by yourself?
Yeah, it was a lot less crowded. And for the second loop, I was pretty much just by myself. I only saw maybe like less than 5 people, probably.
Very good. Oh, also, the first loop, were you getting passed by some of the really fast 4-mile people?
Yeah, there were a ton of people, like, bolting past me.
Yeah, I think that happened to everybody. Let's see. During the whole race, did you stop and drink or eat anything?
I stopped at the 4-mile aid station and chugged some Gatorade, but I kept going after that.
So the outer aid station at the 2-mile mark, you just ran right by it?
Yeah, I didn't stop at that one.
Did you notice that you could hear them? You ran and you could hear them over the ringing the bell, and then you had to keep running away from it for a while before you got back to it? That was kind of hard, like the second time, because you knew, like, oh, it's right over there.
Yeah.
And then you had to run like a 1/2 mile to get back to it.
Yeah, and you're thinking, oh, I'm so close. I'm almost to like this halfway 2-mile point, and then you're not.
Exactly. And did you like the red clay? Is that pretty cool looking?
Yeah, it's different than Iowa soil.
Yeah, we don't have that here. And the day was very nice out, right?
Yeah, it was super nice.
We were lucky.
Yeah.
And did you, how did you do in your age group?
I got first.
You got a gold medal.
Yes, yes, I did.
And I think you were 8th out of 26 females.
Yeah, I think that's
right. Pretty good for your first trail race.
Thank you.
It's very nice. And you didn't even have trail shoes, did you?
Nope.
Just regular running shoes.
Yeah.
Which probably was okay because there was no mud, nothing really crazy as far as that goes. So you were probably okay. Do you think you will run any more trail races?
Probably, but I'm probably going to practice running on trails more before I do any more.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, well, do you have any races coming up in the future? Do you have anything you think you might do, like road races you might want to do?
Well, there's a race in Knoxville in March.
Oh.
A half marathon.
Half marathon.
I might do if I get down there.
And how many road races have you done so far?
I've done one 5K.
One 5K. As an adult, you did some, like when you were a little kid, you did some races, right?
Yeah.
All right, but in your longest training runs, how long have they been so far?
10 miles is the farthest
10 miles.
I've gone.
So you could run a half marathon, I think.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. All right, well, thank you very much for talking to me, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go. A few things I was going to say. Now it escaped me all of a sudden. Oh, I'm sorry about the little buzzy sound in there. I'm not sure what that was. Also, as she mentioned, she's going to do the Knoxville Half Marathon. She has signed up for that. In fact, I will be there as well. I think it's March 24th or 25th. Maybe the 25th, Sunday, March 25th. I'll be there. I'll be doing the marathon. I should be doing the half marathon. So if anyone's going to be there, say hi to me or tell me or something. That'll be her next race. That'll be a road race we'll be doing down there in a few weeks from now, just a few weeks. I feel like I had something else to say. I just can't think what it was. Okay, now I remember what I was forgetting, which is this. The 8-mile race began 5 minutes after the 12-mile race, and the 4-mile race began last 5 minutes after the 8-mile race. So, of course, the fastest 4-mile people were flying by the 8-mile people. And then eventually they came flying past us, past the 12-mile folks. So this is what happens when you have a staggered start, especially when you put the shortest race last, given that those people can hold the fastest pace since they're not going as far. And it was a lot of single tracks, so you had to kind of deal with these fast people flying around you, and it was probably even worse for them because they're trying to just do one fast lap, and they're having to constantly run off the trail around all the 8-milers and then all around all of the 12-milers. So it would have been better probably to start everyone at once, but maybe the problem with that is just too many people to start the race at the same time, so they wanted to spread them out. But that's what I was talking about when I asked my daughter if the 4-mile people came flying by her, because they came flying by us as well. Okay, anyway, that was it for the race and so forth. So like I said, there was one more thing that we did Sunday. But before that, I do want to mention our sponsor for this episode again, Health IQ. Health IQ is a life insurance company that can help you save money. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. Health IQ can save our customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. So why shouldn't these people get a break on life insurance? Right? They're going to cost any life insurance less money in the long run. Get it? The long run? So it's like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver. Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. So if you're interested in this and you want to help support the show, go to healthiq.com/endurance, as in topics in endurance podcast. Okay? healthiq.com/endurance. That's healthiq.com/endurance. And see if you can get a free quote and see if you can save money as well. So thank you to Health IQ. All right, so Sunday evening was the culmination of our trip. And by chance, Camille Herron, as I mentioned, is going to be part of this show. She was going to give a talk at a local running store. The store is called the Red Coyote Running Store, or Red Coyote Running. I think they have two stores in Oklahoma City. And she was going to give a talk at one of them, basically about her running life and her training and so forth and so on. So my daughter and I went to that. And if it sounds like I was stalking Camille Herron, yes, that's true. That was part of it. But as I said, it was kind of part of it because we were going to go try to do this trip anyway. It just kind of fell into doing it this particular weekend, which was real similar to the weekend we did the year before. I had considered going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, because there happened to be a trail race that day. So the reason we didn't go there and instead of Oklahoma City, that was because of Camille Herron. Plus, I think the Tulsa trail races, I wasn't really ready for. I think I would have had to run a longer race or something. I don't know. The distances were better for the Oklahoma City race that we did. Plus, we could stay with my aunt and uncle for free. That was another good reason. Didn't have to get a hotel. So these are the reasons we ended up in Oklahoma City on that weekend. And we went to listen to Camille Herron talk. It was really super cool. And here's the thing. I recorded the talk. So I'm going to play you the talk. Now, the talk itself was like an hour and a half long. I recorded it all, but you're only going to get snippets. This is only about 25 minutes worth of snippets that you're going to get. So a couple of things. Number one, I hope you can hear it well. I'm a little worried because I was sitting about 20 feet from her just holding my microphone. So you can imagine the sound quality right there is not going to be great, but I've done my best to clean it up as best I can. There were some times I couldn't even tell what was being said, you know, because my hearing's not that great. But I did as best I could to clean it up. And so hopefully you can hear it. Also, this is going to be funny because I played all these snippets. I'm going to try to talk between each snippet. And I'm going to have to go back and forth between iTunes and my browser. And I will see if I can do it without screwing up here. So let's give it a shot, okay, and see how this works. So first we're going to start with a little introduction by the owner of Red Coyote. And I have to think about this now because I think about how I'm going to... Sorry, I'm moving my browsers around and my iTunes around and everything else. All right, I think I have it figured out. So let's give it a try here. Here's an introduction from the owner of Red Coyote.
She currently resides here at War Acres with Connor and their dogs and continues to perfect her home brews when not pounding the pavement or the local trails. Camille is sponsored by Nike, Sword Nutrition, Epsom Electronics, Nathan Hydration, Rapid Reboot Recovery, Cliff Bar, and of course, Road Beat. So, a warm welcome to Camille Herron.
Thank you to John for that really nice introduction, and thank you guys for coming out to hear me talk. I have to laugh because I actually ran here about 2 hours ago.
Now she'll talk about the fact that she was born on Christmas Day, a little bit more about that.
I was actually born on Christmas Day and in 81, and they say I came into the world smiling, and my great-grandmother nicknamed me Smiley, and so I basically came into the world smiling. I was a bit of a butterball. I think Mom said, where's my mom? My mom's here. She said I was a very good eater. I just have such a joy for running and, you know, for life in general. So, even when I'm running 100 miles and I'm in pain, I'm still smiling.
Okay, so she did a PowerPoint presentation. So when she says, here is me, she's showing a picture. And that's one reason I can't play you the whole thing, because at some points you really need to see the picture. So that's what she's talking about there. This next little segment, she started talking about all the sports she did as a kid. And this segment, she mentions growing up playing basketball.
Basketball was my primary sport. So my dad and my grandpa played basketball at Oklahoma State. And then my mom went to OU, so we're a house divided. I grew up wanting to play basketball. And my dad, I ended up getting my dad's really long arms and legs. They say that you get your mitochondria, which is your aerobic powerhouse, you get that from your mom. So I got to credit both my mom and my dad for giving me my own unique physiology.
So she started out running track and field and cross country in high school. At one point, I guess she just grew really, really, really fast. So if you see her now, she's pretty tall and pretty lanky. And that resulted in stress fractures. As many of you know, when kids grow really fast, they can have issues. She started getting stress fractures. And that really, she dealt with that all the way through college. So her college career was not that great because of all these stress fractures. And she talks a little bit about that.
I basically didn't have a college running career, and I just became a hobby runner. And then I met my husband. So we got Connor here. He's back there. So you guys might remember Connor from back in the day. He won the OKC Memorial Marathon a couple times. He set the course record. He was the star. He was the runner. And so when I met him and I was helping him with his running career, I was his crew, and I would go drive with him on his long runs. And he would be, so he's like living down in Norman, and he'd be going for like 20, 25 mile long runs, and I'm driving the car, and I'm studying my textbooks, and I'm stopping and handing him water, and you know, so I'm driving for 2.5 hours, and I'm thinking, man, I can't even imagine running that far.
Okay, so she began running again for fun, kind of just to do something, and she found herself running even more than Connor was running, her husband Connor that she mentioned, and he started encouraging her to get more serious, so she started racing, and of course she starts with shorter races like half marathons and full marathons, and right before her first actual marathon, she broke her rib.
Okay, I guess it was my last year of grad school, I ended up running my marathon debut at the Eugene Marathon, and the crazy thing is I fractured a rib accidentally 8 weeks before the race, and I actually didn't know it was fractured. I thought I had a dislocated rib, and I like went to a chiropractor, and he checked it out, and he's like, no, we got to send you to the emergency room. So I had fractured a rib, and I ended up, what I did, because I wanted to run my first marathon, and I kept training for it, and just like taped up my rib cage, and I just kept jogging easy, And I happen to be doing my thesis on enhancing bone recovery. So I kind of became my own guinea pig. So I'm trying to like get my grip to recover, and I kept training, and I went and ran my first marathon. And I was basically like filled my rib in like 3 weeks. Like I was pain free in 3 weeks. It was just like pretty ridiculous. So I really did like fulfill my thesis on how to enhance bone recovery. I guess you just gotta keep running.
So here's a story about when she ran the Oklahoma City Marathon, which either they rededicated it at some point or they started it after the Oklahoma City bombing, which, by the way, happened a few months before I moved to Oklahoma, was the famous Oklahoma City bombing. And so the Oklahoma City Marathon is now, I think, dedicated to this Oklahoma City bombing. And she ran it. So here's her story about Amy, another person who ran that race the year that she ran it and won it.
Okay, so I started running all these marathons, and I think I qualified for the marathon trials like 7 times in 2012, and then we moved back to Oklahoma, and I ended up running, hooked up with the Lane Runners, and I got to know everybody. We knew Mark Bravo for quite some time, and so I met Amy. I don't know if it's her. She's really amazing. I ended up running the OKC Memorial Marathon, and I set the state record in 2012, 2:45. And then we hung around at the finish line, and we got to watch Amy finish. And so Amy is a survivor of the OKC bombing, and she was basically buried under the rubble for 6.5 hours, and she ended up running her first marathon in 6.5 hours. So we hung around at the finish line. I mean, it was just amazing to see her finish her first race, and that really, like, you know, the impact of the OKC Memorial and, like, you know, what it means to the community and how people, like, overcome all these things in their lives. I mean, it was really cool for me to meet Amy and to get to know her. And so I really love the OKC Memorial Marathon a lot because of what it means.
Eventually, after winning all these marathons, she qualified for the Olympic trials over and over. And then people started saying, you know, you should get into ultra marathons. So she tried one in South Africa called Two Oceans. It's a pretty famous ultra marathon. Of course, the biggest one there is Comrades, but Two Oceans is also a fairly well-known ultra marathon.
He'd run in a Spider-Man suit to set the Guinness World Record. And I said, I'm going to do that. So I ended up running the Route 66 Marathon in 2012. I actually grabbed the can of Slay String to shoot my friend Amy's here. I grabbed it from one of her kids. it was really cool. I ended up winning too.
Whoopsie. I'm sorry. That was about her race wearing a Superman costume, which she won. And she set the Guinness Book of World Record for running in a Superman outfit or whatever. Anyway, that's what that was about. She was inspired by Michael Wardian, who had done it before her. Okay, here we go about the first Ultra Two Oceans in South Africa.
Anyways, I ran Two Oceans in 2013, and I kind of underperformed. I finished 11th. And I was kind of disappointed in it, and I actually ended up being bumped up because the first woman, a Russian, ended up testing positive for steroids, and so I ended up getting bumped up. And I was actually pretty devastated at the time because I basically never got my medal. I never got, like, honored or anything, and so I was really, really upset about that, and it's actually made me a strong advocate for anti-doping.
She followed up that race where she came in 11th/10th. She should have come in 10th. She followed that up by running the 2014 Comrades race, the big, gigantic ultramarathon, super, super famous. And she collapsed. It's an 89-kilometer race, which is like 56 miles. She collapsed at 83 kilometers, only 6 kilometers to go. I don't exactly know, but she, you know, she just bonked and passed out, I think, you know. She was still new at running ultras and just going too hard and kind of lost energy, and she blacked out for a moment or something and collapsed and hit the concrete, ended up in the hospital and everything. I believe she said she was fourth place at the time she collapsed. And I started doing some digging and thinking about it. That's the year Ellie Greenwood of Canada won. It was a big deal when Ellie Greenwood won. Because before that, it kept being these two Russian twins who kept winning. These two Russian twin women kept winning it over and over and over and over. They would come in first and second for years. And Ellie Greenwood finally snapped that by beating both those two Russians. So I'm thinking that was the year Ellie Greenwood won. The two Russians were in second and third, and then evidently Camille was in fourth at the time when she collapsed. So 2015, we'll start talking about her 2015 year next, and this was a big year for her with ultras, especially with these big road ultras.
So then in 2015, I said, okay, well, I'm going to give this ultra anything another shot. So I ended up running my first 100K of Grand City that John mentioned. I ended up running the fastest 100K in the world in like 8 years. It's the fastest time on American soil ever. I beat Ann Trace's championship record by like 7 or 8 minutes. And it was my first 100K, and I had no idea what I was doing with fueling and hydration, and I hardly took anything during the race, and I ran, you know, just over 7 hours of hardly taking anything. And so I had no idea I'd done anything special until I got a phone call from the race director the following Monday, and he told me I'd broken like all these records.
So that was Mad City, Madison, Wisconsin, I believe that is. 100K where she had this incredible race. She says it was her first 100K, but it's true she did run 83 kilometers at Comrades 6 months earlier. That year, and she went on to talk about this, but I'll summarize. After that 100K, actually, I think that was in like July, so it's probably about a year after Comrades. I think the 100K was in the summer, I think, maybe. But after that race, in September, she won the IAU World Championship 100K in Winschoten. I don't know where that is. Another country. Setting a personal record of 7:08:35 for 100K, the fourth fastest time ever recorded at that distance by a woman. Then just a little bit after that, I remember this now, facing a strong headwind and rain, she bested the 50-mile world record held by Ann Trason, the famous Ann Trason. And Trason's record was 5 hours, 40 minutes, 18 seconds, and she ran it in 5:38:41 at the Fall 50-Mile Road Championship, 5:38:41. So she did these three races in pretty quick succession. She finished off 2015 by winning her second world title at the first IAU 50K World Championship in Doha, Qatar. Running in the heat and wind, she ran at 3:20:58 to capture the gold by over 7 minutes. So that sounds like four races to me. 100K. You know what? Maybe it's only the three. The 100K was the one she's talking about where she... I don't know. It might have been 200Ks. I'm sorry, I'm a little off there. But nevertheless, there's at least one 100K, if not another. Then a 50-mile, then a 50K. And she kicked butt on all three of them in 2015. All road ultras, but all just incredible, incredible times. Now she talks about her first trail race, her first mountain adventure, which is in 2016, the White River 50-mile in Washington State.
I was on pace to get the course record, and then I went off course by like a mile. And ended up missing the course record by 5 minutes. And I ran the second fastest time, and it ranked me like ahead of, like on the all-time list, like I'm like ahead of Ellie Greenwood and ahead of Ian Trace and like all these famous people. It was my first time to ever run up a mountain. So it was like, okay, I actually was crying, like coming home, like thinking, oh my gosh, like I think I'm meant to do this. Like, I mean, it's really, I was really touched by the scenery, and it was really an emotional.
Now she's going to talk about 2017. We're up to 2017. She starts the year off by running Tarawera in New Zealand. This is a hilly, mountainous trail race, so she talks about that first.
And so then, the past year, I got sponsored by Nike, and I was able to go to Tarawera over New Zealand, and I just crushed it. It was so cool. It was like the coolest experience, because it was an international field, it was an ultra trail world tournament, I'm racing against Magdalena Blay, and I mean, I was just like in the zone, and it was such a cool experience, and shortly after I crossed the finish line here, I passed out, and then they had to put me in a nice bath because I was overheated and stuff, but I just ran out of my skin, and I had such an amazing experience, and it was just awesome.
Husband Connor says, wait, back up to 2016 again and tell us the beer story. So you may have heard this beer story before, but it's pretty fun. So here it is again.
Yeah, I got some beer story. So I went to Brandon.
You want a beer?
No, I did not want a beer. So one of the races of Rams, the Ultra Trail, or I'm sorry, the...
You lost.
You rock. Ultra Race of Champions, 100K, and I was having a great race, and about 51 miles into it, I hit a bonking point, and I was nauseated. I just wasn't feeling well, and I'm slumped over in a chair, and we had bought a six pack of Rogue Stag Diet, and Connor asked me if I wanted a beer, and I kind of perked up, and was like, oh, that sounds really good. So he made me a beer. And I go through that thing in 10 seconds. And then I felt I wanted half of another beer. And I said, I think I had a beer and a half. And then I popped out of the chair and I started going. And I ended up catching I ended up catching the third place guy. And then I broke the course record by 27 minutes. Don't do that. So anyway, so then it came out on social media and how I drank all these beers and crushed the course record. So Brad got in touch with us and they wanted to sponsor me, and they ended up sending us all these goodies and all this beer. And so it was a dream come true.
All right, so that's a pretty funny story, actually. So it's Rogue Beer is the one that sponsors her, and they're going to make a beer in her honor, she says at the end. So, and she decided last year, so if you're at all our ultra runners, you know a lot of this stuff, but she decided last year to give Comrades, the great race in South Africa, another shot. By the way, 20,000 people run this race. It is the biggest ultra in the entire world. No other race is even close. I don't think there's another ultra with 10,000 people, or maybe not even 5,000. So 20,000 people run this road race in South Africa. It's very famous. She decided to give it another shot in 2017. But before the race, she tore a ligament in her knee. I think she calls it the MCL. People hear about the ACL a lot. This is the MCL. She tore it 2 months before the race. So she talks a bit about this.
We were okay, what do we do? We're 10 weeks from Comrades, and I tore my MCL. And actually, so I've got my PT here. See? So we got on the ball. We tried to rehab my MCL and my knee so that I could recover really quick. And so because I grew up playing basketball, I told Connor to go get me a basketball. And so for about 2 weeks, between the PT and then playing with my basketball, how, like, I started to get, like, that stability back with my legs.
I like that. I brought that up because she says to get her knees back in shape again, or the hurt knee, she played basketball. And what you couldn't see was she doesn't mean she was playing pickup basketball games. She was doing drills, dribbling drills, like sideways and, you know what, dribbling between her legs and all this type of stuff, because she was a basketball player, so she knows how to do that. So that's what she meant. She was doing these basketball drills with dribbling and getting her knee kind of rehabbed that way. Here's a funny story about what happened right before the race at the Expo, the Comrades Expo.
Yeah, I should tell that story. So we're at the Expo, like, 2 days before, and we're trying to get through, like, a security gate thing to get to my team, who we've gone through the bathroom or something, and, like, we're trying to get to my team, who's literally, like, right there. And we needed to get through security. They wouldn't let us. They had to, like, go around the Expo to get to them. Well, so there's, like, a security lady, like, pushing me back. And I'm like, lady, I'm going to win the race tomorrow.
She concluded that by saying, I pushed right past her. Evidently, she didn't get in trouble. So, she did win Comrades, but not before almost blowing it right at the very end. Another funny story, which some of you may have heard, and she tells that here.
Basically, they had a march with a timing mat, and they hand you a rose, and they hand you a baton, and I thought I was finished. No, I was not finished. This is like 200 meters from the finish line around the corner. And so I'm like stumbling around. There's like 6 million people at home watching. And I'm like, no, no. Even the people in the audience are like cheering me on. And it was so much noise. I didn't know what was going on. But finally, like, another runner came up and tapped me from behind and pointed, like, you got to keep going. So I go into a mad sprint. It was like the fastest I've ever run in the last 2 weeks. So then I finally get to the real finish line. And they shoot confetti. And they hand me this trophy that thing weighs like 30 pounds.
So she says she could barely hold on to this big, heavy trophy at the end. But it is weird. Why would you put a big arch, a timing mat, and hand someone a rose or whatever 200 meters before the finish? I cannot comprehend. And evidently, it's not even straight. You have to go around a corner, so no one would even know unless you already knew. So I don't understand the setup behind that, but that's what happened. So after Comrades, she tried to run a few mountain races and really had a tough time this last summer. In fact, I saw her at Western States, where I did not finish. But believe it or not, I ran farther than she did, because I ran a whopping 30 miles at Western States. But she only ran about 15 because she fell on all that snow, the same stuff that slowed me down. She fell and got a concussion. So she had to drop it like mile 15. She tried Leadville and had this big hip issue. There was another race in Europe. She wiped out again and got another concussion. So, you know, she was just having troubles with these races that often are really slippery races. And she's kind of wiping out or something. You know, things happen. So things are just happening. So then we get the Tunnel Hill, the race I talked about last time. And yes, she runs it in 12 hours, 42 minutes, 40 seconds. Ultra Running Magazine rated that as the number one female performance of 2017. There was no doubt about that. The fastest North American trail run by man or a woman. Like I said, only one man has ever run a trail run faster, ever. I guess she's going to talk about that a little bit here.
Well, then I said, okay, I'm going to start going for more records. I'm going to go for flatter, like, easier type trail. And I went to Tunnel Hill a couple weeks after I went to the France race, and I broke a world record. How did that happen? it was really incredible. I went to Tunnel Hill, and you know, it's like like one of those magical days. I mean, you watch like Paula Radcliffe running the marathon. It's 2:15, you know, and you watch her and she's gutting it out like the whole time. And you know, and I felt like Tunnel Hill was kind of one of those special days and special moments. And I'm smiling the whole time. Like I'm running ahead for my first 100 miles. And I'm smiling. I'm just really crazy, you know. Like it was just such a magical day.
So here she talks about the fact that she wore Nike's famous 2-hour marathon shoes. So if you follow what happened with that business, Nike tried to come up with this new shoe with just some new technology. And they trained these guys to see if they could run a 2-hour marathon in it. And it wasn't a true 2-hour marathon attempt anyway, because they had all these pacers and all these kind of things that would not be allowed in a normal marathon. But nevertheless, it was a way to try to market the shoe. It's called the Nike Zoom Vaporfly 4% because it was supposed to make you 4% faster or something like that. Well, they failed. The guy ran like 2 hours and 25 seconds, you know, 25 seconds over 2 hours. They didn't make it. But Camille Herron wore that shoe, and she got the world record. So she's the very first person to get a world record in that shoe. So she had those shoes. I don't know if she had the ones she wore there or what, but they had some of the shoes there.
Oh yeah, the first world record of the Vaporfly. So you see that this shoe right here, and it, I think it says under world class, right? Yes, I said the first. This is, they made this for the marathoners, and I ended up being the first world record set in this shoe. So they, I ended up beating the marathoners to the first world record.
After Tunnel Hill, she went on to Desert Solstice, which was a 400-meter track. And set 2 more records there. I can't even, I think it was the 12-hour record and the 100K record or something like that. And I can't recall if they're American records. I think American records. I don't think they were world records. But they might have been. I don't know. It's hard to keep track. She set so many darn records. All right. And I should note that she just won the Bandera 100K in the last few weeks or maybe a month ago. And that got her a golden ticket back into Western States. So she'll be at Western States again this year. So I think she's taking a little bit of a break now, which if so, good. That's smart. Probably starting to gear up for the spring and summer season. So that was it for her talk about her her career up to that point. So now she, very nice of her, she started talking a little bit about her training. She figures people would be interested in training. So a little bit about that.
So yeah, now I'm going to go, I'm going to envision like what my training is like, because I know you guys are probably curious about that. But I mean, we pretty much operate on like a 2-week cycle, and I take my easy days easy and my hard days hard. So easy days for me is about 8 to 9 minute mile pace. And it's about under 70% of heart rate max. And then my hard days, we do short intervals, long intervals, hill work, heart rate progression runs. And so yeah, I also do drills and strides 2 times a week. I like to sleep a lot, so I usually run around lunchtime and evening time. That helps me get my vitamin D and heat training as well. And then as far as training specifics for ultras, I mean, we, like I mentioned, we go to, down to Mount Scott, and I do a lot of hill work down there. I try to get on the trails 1 to 2 times a week, usually at Bluff Creek. So that helps me get like that technical footwork. And then my long runs, so I usually do about 18 to 22 miles. And so I go by time. Like, that for me, that's like 2.5 to 3 hours of running. And so then I come back to evening time for, I run twice in my long run day. So that's a key thing to point out. I come back for another 35, 50 minutes going easy. And then I do like heart rate progression runs where I put on a heart rate monitor and I try to get my heart rate up to like 80 to 90%. So if I get to training at that 80-90%, then it makes it easy when I race 50 miles or 100 miles because it's an easier pace. So I get really comfortable with going at 80-90% heart rate max. So then again, like 40 to 50 miles every weekend in doubles. And I've been doing that for like 11 years. Like a lot of miles, like every weekend. I mean, I know like a lot of ultra runners do like back-to-back long runs, and I split it up into doubles, because that makes it easier for me to get in that mileage every weekend. So, like, cumulatively, I get in, like, 40 to 50 miles on the weekend.
40 to 50 miles just on the weekend, but split up that way by doing two on Saturday, two on Sunday. And she does talk about that, by the way. I don't know if she talked about it here, but I've heard her talk about that. One reason she splits this up has to do with recovery, so that you're, if you split things up by about 6, 7, 8 hours, there's a certain advantage to bone recovery and some of these things rather than one longer run. So, or I guess building strength. It's kind of, I think her idea is two shorter runs builds more strength in certain ways than one longer run. So bone strength, ligament, tendon, muscle. I'm not exactly sure, but there's some advantage in that way. The other interesting thing is you'll hear her talk about how she runs her pace according, relating it to heart rate max. This is unique. I have not heard anyone do this before. In fact, a lot of people say, ignore your heart rate max. It doesn't mean a whole lot, blah, blah, blah. And I asked a question about this coming up, but it's rather fascinating to me that she does this. And what I failed to ask her is, how does she get her heart rate max? Because it's not trivial to do. I mean, you have to really run hard. I usually can't quite get to my heart rate max unless I'm in a kind of a medium distance race and I am just going all out at the end. So how often is she doing that? So I'm not sure how she even knows what it is. And plus, it doesn't stay steady over the years, but maybe she just at least does enough, you know, maybe she just has a rough idea. It's 192 or something, you know, she has some rough idea of where it is, plus or minus a few. But I would like to ask her how she finds out what her heart rate max is. Anyway, on to this point. This is pretty funny. She talks about her Taco Bell and Subway and Waffle House and root beer diet.
Then carb loading. So I like eating Taco Bell. I eat a lot of Taco Bell. I started eating Taco Bell when I was in high school, so like when,
when we go to races, I always zone at the hotel where I know there's a mile away, there's a Taco Bell, and a Subway.
Sugars, because if you eat a lot of fibrous type foods, it makes you fill up and you don't end up taking in as many carbs. So you want to eat more simple sugars leading up to a race. So I'm like drinking juice and soda, honey gels, white rice, bread pasta. I did the Waffle House like 2 nights before. I ran the Desert Solstice Track Race, so I was eating chocolate chip pancakes, and that was pretty good. And then we went to Taco Bell, and I have a lot of Taco Bell and root beer and Subway and cookies and that sort of thing. So all the bad things that you're not supposed to eat, that's like what I eat, basically.
Well, when you're running over 100 miles a week, 4 weeks on end, you can get away with eating pretty much anything for now, I would say. That was her husband saying that every time they go somewhere, he has to find a hotel close to Taco Bell's and Subway's, all that stuff. She mentions using Hot Shot to fight cramping. This is something I use. The verdict is still out for me whether it works, but I'm an extreme, extreme, extreme case when it comes to cramping. It's a very hot, spicy little shot of something that you drink that's supposed to alleviate cramping. Maybe I'll talk about that sometime.
Hot Shot, it's for muscle cramping. In fact, we have some Hot Shot we're going to give away. It's like a hot Jägermeister shot.
Now we get question and answer time, and I was an idiot. There was like 5 questions asked, and twice I put my hand up and asked questions. So one thing is, yes, first of all, yes, I sound like an idiot. Kind of embarrassing. And second, I'm sorry when I talk, I might blow your ears out. I tried to modify this, but keep in mind my voice is right next to the microphone. It's only a foot away. So get ready to get your ears blown out a little bit. I'll try to modify this as best I can. First, I'll preface this by saying I was at Tunnel Hill, so I'm taking some credit because I was 3 times he passed me in a... I mean, we were coming opposite directions, but although you did finish in less than half the time it took me, but and if you remember some guy, actually the last time I saw you, I was worried because it was quite dark, and you did not have a headlamp.
Oh,
and I was like, so if you remember a guy yelling rock and roll, that was me. But I was a little worried because you were still a few miles, I think, from an aid station, and it was right on the edge of being able to see my feet. And I'm like, she doesn't have a headlamp.
Yeah, I have my headlamp, but it was really dark. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It was dark. There was no like street light around, and like there was actually a natural like drop in my pace. Like once it got dark, I was relying on my headlamp. So
yeah.
Yeah, it was really crazy. Like I was trying not to trip and fall, you know, like even though it's like smooth and flat.
Yeah,
yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. Well, my question is, I've heard you talk about this lactic acid theory, kind of why you do the weightlifting. Can you elaborate on that, kind of how you feel that works, kind of the science behind it?
Yeah, I didn't go into too much detail about that, but yeah, I started doing research as an undergrad, and we were looking at blood lactate profiles with strength training, and so there's research showing that the more blood lactate you produce, the more growth hormone release that you have, and so, you know, you produce blood lactate, then you're doing heavy strength training, if you're doing a high-intensity workout, and so the thought was, for me, when I started doing my upper body workouts, if I use heavy weights, I'm going to get that surge in blood lactate and that surge in growth hormone that will help me to recover faster and to get stronger. And so I started seeing this, when I started doing it, I started seeing a jump in my running fitness, like after 6 weeks of doing regular upper body strength training. So there was this correlation with upper body strength gains and running performance. And so it's been very consistent throughout my career.
Is it just the lifting, or does it matter if you're focusing on eccentric or concentric? Does that make any difference or not?
So we were actually looking at eccentric and concentric loading, and so we're using a device that you could both concentric pushing, eccentric resisting back, and so we found out there's an eccentric component, which is like downhill running, that you produce more blood lactate, and so you know, doing strength training, like lifting, you know, bench press, it's that part where you're resisting it coming down, and that's its eccentric part that produces more blood lactate, more growth hormone.
So, first thing is, she does upper body weight training, I think twice a week, I'm positive. She doesn't do any lower leg training. I mean, she's running so much that there's really no place to fit it in. And I think she said she tried it and it did not help her. But she does this upper body weight training, and she claims that if you produce lactic acid, that encourages the production of growth hormone. I've never heard that before. I doubt any of you have, or many of you have. But that's very interesting. I was thinking of double checking that before this recording this, but I forgot. But that's a very interesting little theory. And for one, obviously upper body weight training can't hurt, you know, it's a little stronger in the upper body. And she didn't say this, but I would think part of this is, if producing lactic acid is kind of good, it has this good effect, why not do it in the upper body? Because you don't want to, you know, trash your legs more than you already do running. But it doesn't matter if you trash your upper body a couple of times a week. That's not really going to hurt you. You're running that much. And yet it's going to produce this lactic acid, which produces growth hormone, which is going to help the whole body. So I think that's kind of the idea behind this very interesting idea. And it makes me feel good because I do upper body weightlifting twice a week. And I don't do much leg stuff. I do one day a week, I do a little bit, but not too seriously. So anyway, that's part of that idea is, and I, you know, when she lifts fairly heavy. I can't remember if she said, but I'm guessing between 5 and 10 reps, you know, the last few reps, probably pretty difficult. And focusing on the eccentric contraction more than the concentric contraction part of it. And you can look that up if you need to. Anyway, here is Connor talking about how Camille has to troubleshoot during races at times.
I think the thing to add here is that I think the really good job Camille does is during a race, and probably I do a little bit too, but I think the majority is Camille, that we do troubleshoot a lot. So, and I think that's key to being successful at any level you want to be at. I think it's troubleshooting, okay, what am I doing wrong, even in a race situation, what can I improve? I think Camille did a really good job that day because, you know, we were, obviously, the way the course was set up, I could see her every 4 miles, and it was an out and back twice. Both sides. So you went out 25 miles, came back to the start, and then you went out 25 miles, and came back to the start. And then you did the whole thing all over again. So I think what we were able to do is, because I was able to see her so much, I could even tell by watching her run or whatever. And she was really good at communicating with me too. And, hey, what do you think? What do you expect to get? And so that was good, yeah. So I think troubleshooting is something that we're really good at. And even now, when we do all our training, we plan everything out, we're always thinking of ways, okay, what can we do even better the next day so that, you know, it gets an even better result out of it. And I think that's key when you're at any level of thing. You know, you want to figure out, okay, what can I do even better, you know, so.
Yeah, he's talking about troubleshooting. I mean, you know, every single race, like, you know, I start puking at the World Championship. I mean, what do you do when you're puking in a race, you know? And for me, I feel like one of my strengths is being able to both troubleshoot and to persevere. You know, if you get to feel like that, of course you're going to feel bad at some point 100 miles. I mean, even though I'm running with a smile on my face, like, you know, it still hurts. Like, you know, I go and drop something on the ground, like 80 miles, and I go to bend down and pick it up, and I can't hardly get back up, you know? So, I mean, it definitely hurts for me. I was getting serious muscle cramping and trying to take, like, hot shot and you know, all these things. Like, you're like, you hope you don't bonk at, like, 95 miles or something, you know?
So, by the way, Connor, her husband, is Irish. Did you catch that accent? It's got a cool accent. I wish I'd talk like that. Here's me again.
Yeah.
Okay, just two more. The first one's really quick. And you don't have to tell me. Maybe this is a secret. I'm going to make a guess here. Is J for Jessica or Jennifer?
So, my first name is Jacqueline.
Ah.
So my dad is Jack. And I was the third girl. And they were hoping I was going to be a boy.
I've heard you talk about, I think when you're racing an ultra, you try to run at about 75% of your max heart rate, or maybe that's when you're training.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is that something you and Connor just empirically found works for you, or is that a theory from a book or something somewhere?
So the way I figured out my 100-mile pace was Zach Bitter had run 11:40 for 100 miles, and I had raced Zach at 50-miler, and I was like 21 minutes behind him. So, you know, 50 miles, 21 minutes, I thought, well, 100 miles, I mean, would be about 42 minutes. So 42 minutes, that pace is about 12:20 to 12:30 per mile, you know, if I wasn't taking stops and I had a perfect situation. So 12:20 to 12:30 pace is about 75% of heart rate max for me. So I did some training runs at 75% heart rate max to get comfortable with that pace. And then when I went into the race, I just focused on that effort during the race. So that's how I came out with the 75%.
Okay.
And then when I ran Comrades, I was actually wearing a heart rate monitor, and I figured out that I needed to be about 80% for that 50-mile 100K distance, and I was spot on. I was a little bit elevated, I think, because of the climbing, but that was pretty accurate. So
very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that is really fascinating. For most people who use heart rate, they're going to use it the opposite way she did. They're going to usually focus on a heart rate and try to be able to run as well as possible at that heart rate. All right? Or at least the hope is the more you train at a certain heart rate and then throwing in a little bit of speed work, you'll just get faster at that heart rate. That's kind of the idea. In many cases, that you'll have a race and you'll say, okay, I would like to run it at this heart rate because I know I can sustain this heart rate for some length of time. She flipped that on its head completely. She said, I have a time goal. What would my heart rate have to be to run at that pace? All right, I want to run 100 miles in 12:40. What would my heart rate have to be? And they kind of worked out in training what her heart rate would have to be to run that pace, and then practice running at that heart rate. So instead of letting the heart rate dictate the pace, she's letting the pace dictate the heart rate, and then train at that heart rate to get her body used to training at that heart rate. So she's not saying pick a heart rate that is supposed to be healthy and good and sustainable. She's saying pick a heart rate that's not what she can do and train herself to be able to do it. A very interesting way to go about it. And I think if you are someone shooting for a record, that makes more sense. If you're someone like me, whose goal is to finish and finish alive, and I don't necessarily have time goals for most cases other than cutoffs, it may not be quite as useful. Plus, I think what she's doing is a little more difficult because, A, like I said, she has to know what her max heart rate is, and B, she's got to be able to figure out how to train, and, well, I guess not. I guess she just then runs at paces that get her up to that heart rate and practices running at those heart rates. You know, her sometimes says she goes a little bit harder too. That way, when she is back at that heart rate, it feels easier because sometimes she practices at a higher heart rate. But anyway, very, very fascinating. And we'll finish up all this. This is her father, who was also there, the one who named her Jacqueline. I said that because often her Facebook page, or whatever, will say J. Camille Heron. So I was trying to guess what J was. I guessed wrong. But here's her dad talking about the fact that Connor is a very good coach.
And Connor, this means all you've ever seen. Connor is the greatest coach in the world, hands down. Number one distance coach in Ireland.
He's a pretty good coach.
Connor is also a six-time All-American and really good at what he does. My wife's already on the right, but she's got a building site.
Hey, there you go. And that is it for the question and answer and all that with J. Camille Heron. So thank you to Camille Heron. Thank you to Red Coyote for doing all that. That was really, really, really cool. And hopefully you could hear it well, and hopefully you found it interesting, the things that she had to talk about, and maybe learn a little something too or have some ideas for your training. So that is all it for the endurance part of the show, but as I do sometimes, I have another segment, and this is again going to be my general education segment, which has nothing whatsoever to do with running. But I have just a little bit of time. I think I can throw this in. This is kind of a short one. And this is rather interesting. It has to do with Benito Mussolini. Remember that guy? He was Adolf Hitler's friend in World War II. And it's not really about him. It's about his son. All right? So let me just refresh your memory on Mussolini himself because, you know, we all know who he is. He was just this bad Italian dictator of Italy who fought alongside, on the same side as Adolf Hitler, and somehow he probably ended up dead, right? That's basically what we know. And I am not good at memorizing history very well, so I had to look this up again. So just one paragraph on him. So he was the leader of the National Fascist Party of Italy. He ruled Italy as prime minister from 1922 to 1943, constitutionally until only 1925. Then he just dropped the pretense and said, he dropped the pretense of democracy and established a dictatorship. I'm not exactly sure how that transition happened, but he just became dictator in 1925. In 1940, with the fall of France imminent, Italy officially entered the war. So France is about to fall to Germany. Italy decides to enter the war. I think they tried to stay out of it, but then he was kind of forced to pick sides, and oopsie, he picked the side of Germany. So he entered the war on the side of Germany. In the summer of 1941, Mussolini sent Italian forces to participate in the invasion of the Soviet Union and in the war with the United States. It followed in December after the United States, of course, was bombed in Pearl Harbor. Then the United States entered the war. In 1943, that was a bad year. Italy just suffered one disaster after another. On July 9th of 1943, the Allies invaded Sicily. That's very famous. Mussolini remained in power until he was deposed by King Victor Emmanuel III, on July 25th, 1943. So he was out. On the 12th of September, 1943. Okay, I'm embarrassed. I didn't know this. Just a couple months later, on September 12th, 1943, Mussolini was rescued from captivity in the Grand Sasso raid by German paratroopers and the Waffen-SS commandos. I didn't know this. Adolf Hitler, after meeting with the rescued former dictator, then put Mussolini in charge of a puppet regime in northern Italy. I didn't know that either. I just thought eventually Mussolini just lost, you know, and that he was done. I didn't realize some of these intricacies here. In late April of 1945, so Mussolini, even though he was deposed from Italy, holds on to this northern Italian regime area for a couple more years, or another year and a half. In late April of 1945, in the wake of near total defeat, Mussolini and his mistress, Ciara Petacci attempted to flee to Switzerland, but both were captured by Italian communists and summarily executed by firing squad on April 28th, 1945. See, that's the part I feel like I knew, that, but I just thought he was caught and executed. I didn't realize it's kind of in-between stuff here. He was executed near Lake Como. His body was then taken to Milan, where it was hung upside down at a service station to publicly confirm his demise. I didn't know that part either. So there's your little history, very, very, very short history of Benito Mussolini. But here's the interesting thing, and I'm always interested in the offspring of famous people. You know, sometimes, like, well, you know, Abe Lincoln, you know, his kids, you know, famous people, what happened to Washington's kids or whatever, you know? You're always interested in kind of what happened to them and their descendants and so on. So Mussolini had like four children, and one of them was Romano Mussolini. He was born 1927. He didn't die till 2006, so he was around quite a while. Here's the thing. He was an Italian jazz pianist and a painter and a film producer. Jazz pianist. Who would have thunk, all right? So he grew up playing jazz, and I'm skipping a lot, but after years of playing jazz, he formed a trio, and by the 1960s, he had formed the Romano Mussolini All-Stars. So he still used, I think for a while, he didn't use his name, because I'm sure it was kind of a bad name, Mussolini, but then he brought it back again and formed the Romano Mussolini All-Stars, which became one of Italy's foremost jazz bands. Doesn't that just seem weird? Here's the son of this fascist dictator, now is a cool jazz dude. I mean, I just think that's fascinating. The All-Stars recorded a well-received record, Jazz Allo Studio 7, in 1963 with At the Santa Tresia, I can't speak Italian. Following a year later, Mussolini's band toured internationally with artists including Dizzy Gillespie, Duke Ellington, and Chet Baker. Wow. He recorded a number of albums. His playing style has been described as like a slightly melancholic Oscar Peterson. I vaguely know that name, but I'm not a jazz person. Occasionally inspired, he was always efficient. He made the refrains run on time. I thought that's funny. He made the refrains run on time. Get it? I thought it was good. Anyway, his most internationally famous creation, the song Blues for Alexandra, was composed in 1973 and dedicated to his daughter, Alexandra Mussolini, in his album Mirage. Mussolini was very reserved about his family history. It was only in 2004 that he published a book entitled Il Duce Mio Padre, The Leader, My Father, followed by a similar book in 2005, collecting personal memories and accounts of private confidences and discussions with his father. I kind of want to read those books now. Anyway, I thought that was very, very fascinating, and that's all I have on that. But I am going to play the song at the end of the podcast, this Blues for Alexandra. Actually, I'm going to play it in the podcast. I will not play it on the YouTube video because they will ding me for it. But if you're watching on YouTube, right when this is done, just go search for Blues for Alexandra, and a bunch of versions come up, or a bunch of videos come up, and it's his song. So Blues for Alexandra, put in Mussolini, and you will listen to it. I'm impressed. I kind of like it. And I'm not a jazz guy, but I kind of like it. So I'll play that right at the end here. Otherwise, that is it for the show. Thanks again to Health IQ for sponsoring the show. Go to healthiq.com/endurance, healthiq.com/endurance, to see if you qualify for savings on life insurance. Remember again that this show will be put up on YouTube, so if you want someone to watch it, it takes me usually a week or something. It takes me quite a few days after the podcast that gets put onto YouTube. Again, you can find more about me at my website at runsmith.net, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, my email, which is kemsmith1@gmail.com, and my coaching services. You can donate at patreon.com/runsmith. Also, please go to iTunes and leave a rating or a review. That would be very nice. Email me if you have any feedback whatsoever. That would be great. And that was it. Coming up is going to be Blues for Alexandra. And I'm going to have to get the... I'm pulling off the microphone. I'm just going to play the song and then... whoopsie. This is going to be problematic. Hold on a second. Don't go. Hello, hello. I'm back. Okay, I'm just going to play the song on my computer and then I'm just going to record it that way. So it's not going to be the most highest quality recording. So coming up, Blues for Alexandra by Romano Mussolini. If you're on YouTube, YouTube it. And otherwise, this is Runsmith Enterprises presenting Topics in Endurance Sports. Signing out. Have a fun workout. Keep listening. Keep listening. Here it comes. Can you dig it? Come on, can you tell me that wasn't catchy? That was catchy. Did you hear me drop my phone at the beginning of that? Yeah, I'm a genius. All right, I'm going to go out and run in the mud, because here in Southwest Ohio, it is mud, 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 and more mud. So I'm going to go run in the mud. I suggest you go run in the mud, too. Bye-bye.